Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to Harry and Jen Do Horror with Friends. Today we are speaking once again with the incomparable Kate Conroy to cap off our discussion of the Scream universe. In this episode, we cover Screams 5 and 6 from 2022 and 2023, respectively. However, before we proceed, I want to mention that we did a little context episode on the OG Scream from 1996 last month, and if you haven't heard it, I highly recommend pausing here and hitting that up first. In that episode, we lay out a bunch of context and analysis that we reference in this episode. Worth checking out. Something I think worth mentioning about this episode, we did talk a bit about our feelings on the current status of the upcoming Scream 7, but we didn't really think to record what that status actually is. So to cover that base, here's a brief explanation. Following the release of Scream 6, stars Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega, who originally signed on for Scream 7, both left production. Barrera was fired for making pro-Palestine social media posts, and Ortega's departure has been a little less transparent. I felt the need to just give you that little tidbit before we get into it. We have a few other developments as well. If you want to follow our social, which posts teasers and behind-the-scenes content, hilarious horror memes, whatever, you can hit us up on Instagram and Facebook. And if you want to drop us a line to suggest movies, start up conversation, or just say hi, you can find us at harryandjenpodcast@gmail.com. Links to all of that are in the show notes. Y'all, we have so many exciting movies on the docket this year. Up next, we have Stop Motion, this really weird dark descent into madness that blends live action and stop motion animation. Later on, we're hitting Late Night with the Devil, the new Nosferatu, Immaculate with Sydney Sweeney, and more. If those movies are interesting to you, think about hitting that follow button. We'd love to have you along for the ride. Lastly, I once again want to say that if you are liking what we do, please take a moment and give a quick rating or review on the streaming platform of your choice. Not only does it help us to reach new audiences, but we genuinely like seeing what you think and improving what we do. This project is still super new. We've only been at it since the fall, and we are really enjoying turning it into something a little bit bigger. All right, that's it. Let's talk about Screams 5 and 6. The movies make an implicit claim that they, unlike others, carry the torch in the imposter-laden, money-grabbing, sequel-obsessed film climate of the 21st century. And my question to you both is, do we buy that?
Say it again.
So...
question.
That's gonna to be my the... that's the cold open
yeah,
right there.
Like, I'm gonna just do a long pause,
the sigh, and then
something.
Say it again.
Hi everyone, I'm Jen Lightfoot and I am an artist and tattoo artist and I am drinking lemonade and vodka tonight, so
a classic.
Swanky.
Classic, yeah.
Swanky. All right, I'll go next. I'm Harry Nichols. I am a singer-songwriter and English teacher, and something interesting about me today is today I've listened through the first 7 songs of the new Taylor Swift album.
Oh.
So, oh.
Mm-hmm. Are you a Swiftie?
I'm not like a hardcore Swiftie. I'm not one of the religious practitioners of Taylor Swift like many people are, but I think it's decent. All right. I'm good with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to jump on because I also listened to the album today.
Nice.
A couple times through. And I'm it's growing on me, as they all do. My name is Kate Conroy. I am the owner of The Rhine House, a nice little tavern with a drinks price to move. I'm also a golfer, a mother, nice. A singer. I know, I didn't just want to do like what I do for my, you know, job, but it is a really fun job to have. And I'm drinking tequila on the rocks.
Mm.
And I'm not a Swiftie, but I do really enjoy Taylor Swift.
Right? You know, I really feel like every now and then, I don't love every song of hers. This is now a Taylor Swift podcast.
Yes!
I don't love every song of hers, but I do think she can make catchy music. Every now and then she comes out with one that's just a real banger.
Yeah, she's a great songwriter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. We always talk about how she changes the economies of cities where she plays, which is kind of baller.
That's,
you know?
Wild, yeah.
She's a woman. She's a, you know, badass woman in the world.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we'll give it to her.
So, are we going to talk about scary movies? Or are we just going to talk about Taylor Swift all fucking night?
Well, I hope we come back to Taylor, but yeah, let's get into Scream.
Yeah, so we are talking about Scream's... Scream 5, right? But it's just called Scream.
Yeah.
And Scream 6, 2022 and 2023. Mm-hmm. Before we do summary, can I put anybody on the spot to try to encapsulate what happens in the Scream universe between Scream 96, which we talked about last time, and this episode, which is the two most recent installments. So it's like three movies.
I feel like it should be Kate.
Well, I don't actually know, because I never have seen the other ones. I know. And I recently just said to Casey, someone I watch a lot of horror movies with, that like, where is the... Where, I feel like I've seen... like clips of Stab being shown in the movie theater,
right,
and
right.
people reacting to it, and Stab being really campy and this thing. Like, it's in my memory, but I don't remember the movie I saw it in. And was that in like 2 or 3 or 4?
Right.
Is, so I've seen some of it, but not like, I can't give any context to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jen, do you have any things you want to contribute? What do you...
So you're basically saying, like, where the first one led up to the fifth one?
No, I don't need, like, a blow-by-blow. I don't need a blow-by-blow of, like, plot points. Uh-huh. But, like, just what are the broad strokes? Like, what should we note has happened in this universe?
Okay, well...
Gail wrote a book.
Yep. Gail
based
and...
Based on the original... Right?
Killings. Yep.
Yeah. Also, the movie. So, Stab came out. Like,
that's true.
So I feel like
Stab came out.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Is that, like, there was a movie, the book written about the killings, and then a movie made from the book about the killings.
Mm-hmm. So, everybody knows about it.
It's fandom now.
Yes.
It's like fan, whatever, out in the interwebs.
Yeah. I think that's a really important thing to note, right? That now, like, the events of the first movie have been, like, turned into its own version of itself in this metafictional world, right? Where we have the Stab movies, and there's a huge cult following for the Stab movies, and everything that the new killers do is like about what happens in the Stab movies, it seems like. Some of them, anyway.
It feels like they're only working off of the Stab movies.
Yeah.
They're not, they're working off of...
Because they're making a sequel to the Stab movies.
In reality.
Yeah.
What did you... Do you all like the concept of the Stab movies? Like, just, like, as an idea?
Yeah. I do.
I do, too.
I mean, I don't like that it's, like, very campy
interpretation. Well, but I feel like camp is part of it.
It has to be more campy than Scream, so it's, like, super over the top.
Right.
So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
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 It tracks for how, like, we do things in our real world.
Yeah.
And it's meta.
Yeah.
It is meta. It's well, I feel like, I guess that's my observation on, like, the franchise as a whole. It feels, and I think I said this last time, but, like, it feels like every subsequent movie tries to kind of, like, out-meta the previous ones.
Yeah. For better or for worse.
And, like, do we like that or do we not like
well,
that?
Well, I want to talk about the for worse, because my initial reaction is, I think they do a really good job out-meta-ing each other and leaving some surprises in there.
Right.
Where you're like, okay, I know what's going to happen, but I'm still, like, a little bit shocked.
Right.
I think they do, but I think that because now they're on 6, they're starting to run out of ideas as to how to make it meta. So, like, they've turned... Oh, my God. This is going to turn into, like, fucking critique already.
Before we get into that, I'm wondering... Like, so I wanted to just, like... state what I've listed here on my outline as my key complaint, but I think I want to just call it, my key observation. Okay. My key observation.
I like key complaint.
It's
okay.
Not a complaint.
I wish I had a key complaint.
It's an observation about the Scream movies, which is that Scream 2, so Scream, as I gave a long and very boring explanation of my whole analysis of Scream 96, I think is like
it's
a movie
boring,
that's about like youth culture. Thank you. It's a movie that I think is about like youth culture and misogyny, and I think that's really cool. And they use metafiction as a way to deliver that theme. Screams 2 through 4 I think are just kind of about the Scream movies. You know what I mean? Like, it leaves the, like those other topics kind of out of it. And, like, there's just this increased focus on, like, the Stab movies and the universe that they've created.
Yeah, less on, like, the actual world in like, we're living and watching the film.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, the first one had a mix. It was, like, they had watched these horror movies, and they got these things. However, they also had a personal connection to the the characters that they were killing, right? Like, this person actually wronged me in real life. I'm going to use horror movie, you know, stuff to, you know, counteract that.
Totally.
And this is, like, totally all Stab. No relation to these people.
Right.
Well, kind of.
Well,
not, but no relation to, like,
no relation to us, right? As, in the real world, right?
Yeah.
And to be perfectly, like, to be super fair, I think Scream, I want to call it Stab. Scream 2 makes some attempt to connect to the real world, but gets very muddy. It, like, doesn't, it's, like, doing stuff with, like, antiquity, and, like, there's, like, a, they perform a Greek tragedy in the middle of it.
I don't remember.
It's, like, really weird. But, like, also, it's, like, what the fuck are you talking about, Wes? You know what I mean? By the end of it. I just, I didn't get it. But then, like, beyond that, there's just an increased leaning in on those metafictional elements, the, you know, making more and more of a deal about the fact that we're talking about scary movies and we're talking about the Scream universe. And I really think that Screams, like, 3 and 4, though I did, I was entertained by 4, are basically just, like, fan service.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So.
Which one is Jay and Silent Bob in?
Season 3.
So that's
Silent
Bob
is in 3. Yeah.
I'm certain that one is good though.
Definitely. 3 was fun for no other reason than the cameos.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher's in that and like, yeah.
All right, I got to go back and I'm sure I've seen them but
it's a mountain of shit. Don't bother. Because it's not an indie we can be.
That's true. That's true we can. Yes.
Wes Craven's dead. He won't be offended.
Yeah, and the new director is they're not watching. I don't even know who directed these, actually.
No, yeah, me neither.
They don't matter.
Fuck them. So, can we... I'm going to make Kate summarize.
Oh,
can
God.
You summarize Scream 5? So, if you want to do 5 and 6, if you want to just do broad strokes...
I can try. I'm going to try to do broad strokes.
Okay,
if I start to unravel, just give me like a wink. Right. I'll be like, okay.
We'll give you the high sign.
So, Scream 5, it's 25 years after... Mm-hmm. A Scream, initial Scream. Ghostface is back. They are attacking a group of teens that we come to sort of find out throughout the movie. They all have a relation in some way to the original people that were killed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the two, the kind of the final girls, the final four... The core four, you know, make it through the end, and Scream 6 is essentially the same plot, basically. Like, the Ghostface, another Ghostface situation comes back. This time, it's because in Scream 5, one of the Ghostfaces was murdered. His family comes back to avenge and to, I guess, honor his love of the Stab movies.
Right.
Yeah. And the core four, you know, remain.
So what analytical thoughts? Do we have any analytical thoughts about this movie, or are we just like, this movie is Scream fucking 5? You know
okay.
what I mean?
Are we doing 5 and 6 thoughts. Together?
We're talking 5 and 6 together.
Okay, so. Okay, yeah.
I will say there's some things I liked. I think, thinking back about your analysis of, like, Scream 1, I think there's a lot more empowerment vibes in this one. Like, doubling down, which is kind of nice. You know, they're armed with guns. They're ready to go. Like, the females are like, we're not taking any shit.
You mean Gail and
Sydney? I think all of them, really. They feel, all of the female characters feel more informed, more aware, more, you know, self-assured.
Totally.
And more, like, prepared.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It feels a little bit like a throwaway to say empowerment, but, like, it does feel like it has so much more of that than the... Like, the first one was sort of phoning that in a little, but I think this one is like, oh, we better focus on female empowerment, like, mental health, you know, and these kind of things.
I like that.
I think that's super legit, and that's even so... Even Tara seems, like, more... Like, in that first scene, she has to tell the killer what elevated horror is, right? Like, she has to, like, teach the killer a little bit about what has happened in horror.
I love Scream 4. Yeah.
You know? Which is really cool, actually, and as an aspect of this that I like. So I love that, too. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
You actually touched on it with mental illness, which is the stuff that I had, like, kind of, like, taken notes on. I felt like the movies were trying to, both of them, kind of say that, like, mental illness is genetic. Like, like with Sam, it was her dad, Billy, and then Billy's mom as well. And then the other family, which I don't remember any of their names. There was the cop guy and then his daughter and his son and then Richie.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're trying to do something with that. I don't know how much they're saying about it, but I feel like, and there's a couple other things in there that they like quote about family, like they kind of call like the core four family at one point.
And then they mentioned therapy a bunch.
They mentioned therapy.
She's in therapy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they do, I forget who says it because I didn't write it down, but someone says, we're a team. Actually, we're a family. It's one of the core four people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think they're trying to do something with that.
Like support. You need support from all these different areas in your life, including professional maybe, or you're a found family.
Totally.
Oh, I like,
You know, which is huge.
Yeah. It's got like a 21st century awareness of mental health and what it takes to be mentally healthy. I don't have the same spiel that I did for Scream 1, but I have like a little something. I was focusing my thoughts on the idea of like the modern film industry and the age of like sequels and requels, and how kind of like everything in the theaters these days has to be a sequel of some pre-existing intellectual property, right? And that's like, I mean, that's a lot of what they like actually talk about in the movie too, right? So just to go back to some of our contextual statements about the previous movies, the Scream movies have become about copycats of copycats of killers, right? Like we're getting 3 and 4 degrees deep at this point, right? And so in that, I think there arises this question of authenticity. With each passing movie and set of killers, we're further removed from that core movie that resonated with people in 1996, both in the metafiction of the stab movies and just like in real life, right? Like people give less of a shit about Scream 4 than they did about Scream, right? That's just how these things work, the like ripple effect of enthusiasm. So the rise of requels, as the film has dubbed them, which I both love and hate, gives filmmakers a new chance at returning to the basics, stoking those nostalgic feelings with audiences. And for a franchise that weaves the making of movies into its actual like story material, there's like a new opportunity to expand the story, I think, right? So totally. Like, yeah. So the requels, let's talk about requels for a second. I think it's like a 2010s phenomenon is when we really started seeing them pop up, right? They're both lampooned in this movie, but they're also like reenacted and supported by this movie. Like this movie is a requel.
Yeah, it is.
As it itself defines them, right? Mindy explains it's a reboot and a sequel, right? It uses the power of legacy characters, moments, and locations heavily derived from the classics to create feelings of nostalgia and cleverly transfers the feeling to a new cast capable of carrying the franchise into a profitable future.
Mm-hmm. Is that her direct
quote? No, that's my paraphrase.
Okay.
With also maybe some slight
just curious
judgment in there.
With a sneer.
With a sneer, yeah. Specifically, I see this movie taking a lot of cues from Star Wars' handling of this with the Force Awakens. And I, just so you both know,
should we have a podcast about that?
It's taking honestly, every inch of my...
That would not go well.
Every ounce of my willpower to not go off on a tirade about Star Wars right now, but...
I mean, you have a Star Wars shirt on.
I am actually
wearing my daughter's name is Rebel, so we should probably do this.
We should probably get there.
I feel like I should be removed from the podcast because I don't like Star Wars.
No, that's the best kind of person to talk to about Star Wars.
That's true. All right, this is now. It went from a Taylor Swift podcast to Scream to Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where will it go next?
I hope New Jersey again.
Yeah.
No,
sure.
No, just there were so many choices in the plot of this movie that I was like, I feel like you saw The Force Awakens and were like, we can do that with Scream. A lot of the... I think it's better handled in Scream 5 and 6 than it was in the Star Wars sequels, because holy shit, what a clusterfuck that was. So anyway, a key requel concept. So what a requel is, it is generational passing of the torch, an attempt to convince viewers of the new movie's authenticity, right? That this is Star Wars. This is Jurassic Park, right?
This is the world.
This is the same
world.
Same thing that you have rose-colored glasses about, mm-hmm. about your youth. We are doing it again, right? I'll just come right out and say, it feels like a sleight of hand to me. It feels dishonest as a filmmaking practice.
How come? Tell me more.
Just the idea of like manipulating moviegoers' nostalgic feelings while at the same time presenting us with a new cast in an attempt to have that new cast stimulate those feelings going forward for people.
And almost like we will get rid of the older cast as we go along.
And they will get rid of it because they're going to die. They're going to, you know, this is where we're at with this franchise.
But I kind of disagree. Like, I don't think that it's for us.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's for new, like, younger people. So it's younger people in the film speaking to people in their same cohort, like in their 20s now, who have probably never seen a movie from 1996. Mm-hmm. And then maybe they will now go back and watch, you know, some. But like, I think it's a little bit for us because we know Scream and we're probably going to check it out.
Right.
Yep.
You know, no matter what. But I think it's to snare a new audience, which I think is... necessary.
A new audience is in there, but I think that we can't. I feel like new audience doesn't have reason to believe in the authenticity of the new movies if the older generation isn't vouching for it.
Gotcha.
If that makes any sense.
Right. Like, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Right.
And they might not care as much.
They might not care.
And they might not. And like the new audience probably doesn't care. And then the powers that be probably don't care if the new audience cares. Because.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in that regard, you're right. It's a little bit like a little chintzy to just sort of, prey on those things.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's not like a great crime I'm talking about here.
Put them in jail. They're all
right. Round them up.
That is kind of a reboot, right? Like a reboot is meant for the new generation.
Well, but what I find uniquely like tricksy and a little bit sinister about a requel versus a reboot is that a reboot presents us with an entirely new cast and doesn't attempt in such a great way to make you feel nostalgic
and incorporate like older characters and like past narratives, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the movie is trying to convince us of its authenticity by giving us a story about the importance of parental guidance to a new generation of viewers. That opening scene, Jenna Ortega, aka Tara, is lured into the danger by the killer dangling like closeness to her mother in her face, right? Mom is an addict. She's away a lot. We learn these things. She desires parental guidance. So this is Tara, not the mom, obviously. Something that Sam, whether she likes it or not, actually has. She has parental guidance. And then Sam also becomes Tara's parental guidance
End
of the movie. Huh?
You mean like...
I mean Billy, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Tara here is a figure. That. Yeah. Tara's a figure, I think, for the new generations reaching the Scream films. Hmm. And her desire for parental closeness is a desire, right? Because your parents, like, that's your source. That's the origin, right? That's authenticity. So, like, her desire to know more about her mom is about the younger generation wanting that authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I felt like the movie was setting up Sam and our killers on opposite ends of a spectrum of authenticity, right? In that first hospital scene, we learned that Billy Loomis has passed the killing urge on to Sam. The killing instinct is the very notion of authenticity, right? It is the impetus that began the entire franchise, right? And it runs in Sam's blood. in the metafiction, what I'm calling for these movies, because every single one of these goddamn movies has one of these, I'm calling it the metafictional dump scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, they all do.
Where a mm-hmm. smart, brainy character is just like, here's what this movie's going to be. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Like, everybody sit down and listen.
Right, just shut up. Here's a monologue about metafiction. It's smart, goddammit.
And this one is Mindy, which is the niece of the brainy one from right. the first mm-hmm.
What is
Randy?
That
character?
Randy, that's Randy. It, that's it.
And I actually kind of like her analysis in Six about it's like it's now a franchise and everyone's right. like, huh, and it has different rules.
Right, right.
Kind of a but good the way rules, to go.
No, she's very savvy. And I, you know, I think I just started. I'm getting into now critique you're... here. I got to stop.
I know. We'll get to critique.
We'll get to critique. We'll get to critique. So she says the killer, well, she doesn't say this, but it is figured out by the end of her speech that the killer is making a fan fiction. Right, that's what they say. So we're setting up either, you know, the very blood that begat the entire franchise versus a fan fiction. Right, it's a seething, angry fan bubbling to make a movie that suits their tastes. There are two people who enjoy the films from the outside and who seek to imitate it. So they're not an authentic part of it. There's no genuine connection to the original horror of the first Stab film. Their understanding of it is mitigated and muddled by their perception, interpretation, and nostalgia as outsiders, right? So the film that they're making is inauthentic, where, you know, Sam is and Tara are part of the authentic experience. And although Sam resists the urge to kill for most of the movie, it proves useful in the film's climax, and the parental hand of authenticity is what allows her to survive, right? She has mm-hmm. to give in to the urge to kill, that connection to the original. Sam also thanks Gail and Sydney for their service and advice, which is more parental guidance stemming from the OG mm-hmm. films and maybe like an argument for hybridization of the forces that were opposed in 96 as a way forward for the series and franchise. Both sides need to unite. I wrote unit. Both sides need to unite to save the franchise from the meddling hands of inauthentic filmmakers like those we see griping in the Stab 8 takedown video watched by his character's name is Richie, but in my opinion, I think he's the poor man's Pacey.
Oh my God. Did any of you watch? Yes, I was thinking that the whole time.
He is?
He's a Quaid. He's Dennis Quaid's kid.
I knew he was the son of someone famous.
He is such the poor man's Pacey.
He's totally the poor man's Pacey.
I can totally see that now.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm never going to unsee that.
I loved Pacey. So, I loved Pacey.
So in the end, Sam says to Tara as they're sort of closing the ambulance doors, you're not going anywhere without me. Don't worry. I'm going to hold your hand all the way there, which I interpret as a very like kind of rest assured young viewer. Like this, what we have here is Scream, the ones that your parents love, and we are bringing it forward into a new generation. Mm-hmm. So what do we think so far?
I like that reading, because even when we were talking about the first one, there was like, I mean, lack of parental guidance, I guess you could say, right? With them.
Well, yeah, like a lack of parental guidance is like a huge thing in all of them, I feel like.
Yeah, that's you know? True.
But it has to be. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. it has to be like teens on their own figuring it out, otherwise like... You know what I mean? Nobody cares if, like, mom can figure it out.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, I don't have as thorough an analysis of Scream 6, just, like, how some of these ideas, I think, are carried into it, mm-hmm. basically. Samantha has to carry her connection to the OG films into Scream 6, where it continues to protect her, right? That killing instinct, again, comes in handy. It enables to protect Tara against even more imitators, including the mobbed Halloween streets of New York City, in which basically everyone is wearing a ghost face mask, mm-hmm. right? You remember that
scene? I wanted
more
of that.
The imitators and the outsider fanatics continue as Scream 6's climax takes place in an unofficial museum of Stab memorabilia. We have in that scene the mixed embracing and rejection of idolatry that comes with a revered franchise in an attempt to make us think that this sequel actually has the honest goods, which again, the jury's still out on that for me, whether it actually does. Detective Bailey and his kids, despite their obsessive collecting of Stab stuff, are unable to outkill the authentic killer who dons the original Ghostface robes to perform the final deeds.
Why did she do that? I need to think about
it. Because it's
just
about authenticity.
I know, but that's like, when I thought something was going to change.
Billy Loomis.
Like, I, the whole time I'm waiting to find out in six that she's really one of the killers somehow.
It was going to happen in seven. I think it was going to happen.
But why did she put... It's so bizarre that she put that on. Anyway.
I guess it was maybe to lead us into seven, maybe?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Like...
It had to be, because otherwise it makes zero sense for the plot of six.
Sure. While the Fakers can't cut it, the audience's nostalgia is stroked by the knowledge that Sam is now filling the mold. Billy Loomis is in a way back, as we just said. Or at least that's what they're teasing. And again, that's what breaks my heart, because we are not going to get a conclusion to whether or not she will fully become the killer, which I would love. And it would actually make me feel like it's actually kind of legit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have... like to see them have done that with her. I will just say one critique about her. I don't think she's a good actress.
Oh, Melissa
there were Barrera. There were many moments, like the scene on the bed where she's giving her hospital speech about Billy with the dad. I was like, I don't know if it's the writing or her acting, but there are many moments where I was like, she's not believable as sad. Mm-hmm. She's just... the way she delivers certain lines, it just feels like that was that the best take you could get.
Yeah, that's fair.
Felt like Jenna Ortega carried it better than she did.
She did a good job, I thought, and she really showed the misery in like a lot of the like anguished, painful scenes.
Yes, do you feel like that's part of why you have this sort of like this isn't believable to the idea that you're saying?
That
or no,
that didn't bother me as much. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it, but. I guess my skepticism about whether it deserves the authenticity that it is claiming really stems from, am I going to give this franchise a pass on a practice that I find fundamentally a little deceitful to fans? You know what I mean?
And do you? Do you give it a pass?
Well, I wish I could say, but I'm not going to get the seventh film, so...
I need the conclusion.
Okay, just so
I need them to have the balls. Here, I'll tell you what. I need them to have the balls to make Sam the killer in the end. Okay. Then I will be like, all right, you have done something here.
You're never going to get it, though.
I'm never going to get it, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just keep... I was thinking that the whole time, too. Like, I couldn't decide if I really wanted that to be true, because, of course, I love a happy ending. I love it when everybody's... you know, feels really good at the end. But, and I think, yeah, six to do it in six would have been too quick of a switch. Maybe you would have had to really play that plot line out. But, my question is, what else, is there anything else that could have been different that would have made you feel a little better about them delivering this to you?
If they had made like, some attempt, look, if they had made some attempt at making this movie about more than the Scream movies, right, like as I said, right, Scream's two
more
through,
than the Stab movies. You
that's
mean.
No, slash the Scream movies, right? Because the Stab movies are a stand-in for the Scream in its own universe.
You,
right?
Oh, you mean the makers of the films, not like the killers making it about? More
right,
than
that's
the
what I mean. Yeah, the makers of the films, if they had made some attempt to make this about whatever 21st century topic is relevant.
Yeah,
but like how the first one, it's like about like teen angst and how these kids are just like the youth is like terrible.
Exactly.
And you know, wants to watch terrible things and people dying and like blood and gore. And this one, you're right. As they progress, they become so insular. Like they're more about themselves than they are saying anything bigger than that.
Right. Which is my main complaint about it. And like, I would like this, cause I do think talking about authenticity is kind of a sneaky way around that issue, but you are still ultimately talking about the Scream movies in this movie, right? Yeah. And whether this iteration of the Scream movies is as legit as the original, right? That's what this is about.
And it's like they used, like, I don't know, the fact that it all happened like in Five and Stu Mocker's old house.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I kind of feel like that lends a little bit to what you're saying.
This
like they
saying.
Couldn't figure out another way to make you feel it aside from being like, how about we just make those guys related and then this person lives in the house?
Right.
Hey, done.
And then the sixth one, they were like, what would be a twist if we had three killers?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but then you'd just be like...
Yeah.
So I have my last statement on Screams 5 and 6, okay? While Screams 5 and 6 are chiefly concerned with the Scream franchise, this is a lot of what we've already covered, so I apologize. I do think there's an attempt... to distinguish Scream from other rebooted, requeled, and proliferated intellectual properties. The movies make an implicit claim that they, unlike others, carry the torch in the imposter-laden, money-grabbing, sequel-obsessed film climate of the 21st century. And my question to you both is, do we buy that?
Say it again.
So...
question.
That's gonna to be my that's the cold open
yeah,
right there.
I was like, I'm gonna just do a long pause,
the sigh, and then
Jen says something.
Say it again.
Oh my god.
I think that the new Scream movies make the implicit claim. So they don't say it explicitly, but they're making an implicit claim that they, unlike other franchises that have been rebooted and stuff, carry the torch in the imposter laden, money grabbing, sequel obsessed film climate of the 21st century. So like, they have authenticity. All these other fakers don't have authenticity. Not Jurassic Park, not Star Wars, not Indiana Jones, right? Like none of these other, like, you know.
Universes, basically.
Yeah.
Why do you think that Scream would feel like they're the only ones that have authenticity?
Yeah, how are they? Yeah,
that's because I think they're using the metafictional aspects that are unique to the Scream universe to kind of allegorically try to illustrate that for us.
I feel like the meta thing has become like a crutch for them after a while. Like, it's interesting, but I don't think it makes them better than any of the other ones. And I think that they would need to do something more, something new and something that says something about our culture as we are today in order for them to be above any of the others. 'Cause I don't think that they are more authentic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they said anything interesting or new about today in the way that maybe the original touched on. But I don't know, maybe I just have a low expectation for what they can deliver. And so I kind of feel like they did okay. Like, I keep trying to think of, like, how could it have been, you know, different? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I think... You know, you kind of, I feel like you're giving the impression that they were sort of like, ha 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 ha, dumb viewers. Like, well, we're just going to kind of like, we're going to phone this in and you're going to eat it up. And you feel like duped or something.
I don't know if it's necessarily phoned in, but I do feel like it is trying to dupe us, the viewer who is nostalgic for the original.
Okay.
I do think that. It's not explicit, but...
Well, they bring back the characters, the legacy characters, as if they are characters in the film. That's not like cameos or like...
Right, right.
You know, like... Right. I can only think of Ghostbusters, that franchise that has like... You know, they make cameos in all the like reboots or whatever they are. But this, they're like legitimate characters that survive till the end, a lot of them, and then they make it to the sixth.
And they learn as they go, and they kind of, they adjust. They're not just like the same character being like, I'm dead.
But I think that's part of the reason why it's like being duped, maybe, is that it's like, look, old fans, we have your favorites back. Dewey's here. Ah, shit, we killed him.
But I have guns now and tasers.
right. Because they've learned.
What could go wrong?
They know, yeah. So that's it. That's my whole analysis. Man. Those are my thoughts.
I wonder if seeing the whole franchise creates that a little bit more for you. Whereas I may or may not have seen everything else, but I think if you just jump from one, like going from one to five, it makes a lot of sense and it's not muddied by any other ideas.
Yeah. And I think that's intentional. And I think the reason that I decided to watch all six of the movies was because when I was researching this one before I watched, it said that there is something to be gained by watching all six of them. Like,
for sure.
Yeah. Not that you need them to understand the movie by any stretch, but just that you know, it gives you like a more complete picture of what's going on. And yeah. And I do think that, you know, part of what led me to this topic was feeling like by Scream 4, you know, this is just like, so it's just so routine and so disconnected from the original. Other, like, beside, you know, intentionally referencing the original. But that's very superficial.
Should we hop into critique? All right, who wants to go first?
Should we just all say it at the same time? And what are we doing?
That'll be very easy to process for the listener.
Yeah, are we doing five and then six? Like, we're doing two.
That's such a great question. Maybe, can we do a composite score? And then if we feel like we need to,
like if they're,
separate
if
five
we've
and
made
six.
Like an average between the two, then we can like separate them.
I'll go first. I'll go first. Okay.
What did we say for the first one? I forget.
I know, that's what I was trying to remember too.
I gave it a 9. I remember
you
it's
did.
The only
I think
9
I said
I've ever 7. Given 5 in the
and
show.
You were like, that's safe.
I think I gave it a 6.
That sounds right.
Okay. Right.
Since then, I've explained to Jen that my rating system has evolved a little bit. Oh. So if I feel that the movie conveys a coherent theme of any kind, I'm going to give it like what in school would be like passing out of 10, which is 6.5, 65%, you know. So I think
wait, now Harry's doing that, but I'm not doing
you
that.
Don't have to do
my
that.
Brain can't function that way. So
I'm just too much of a teacher to like, because
I'm like, it's like 50-50.
So you kind of have a baseline.
Yeah. So I'm going to give the collection 5 and 6. Collectively, I'm going to give them 7. 5, I would give, honestly, like a 6.5. And 6, I would give a 7.5. So, like, really very little variation here. But, like, it's a together, it's like a solid 7 for me. I just found I found 6 to be, like... like it's the scariest one for me, and so like I feel like it conveys a theme, and it's got the added bonus of like actually legitimately making me kind of afraid at times. I think that the scene in the subway was the most anxiety inducing scene in all of the Scream franchise. Like I found that to be really scary. I like some of the change. I am a product of the early 2000s media, you know, and post 9/11, there was a big change in a lot, like the media that was produced and that was adopted, where people suddenly wanted things that were darker, things that were faster paced, broodier, right? The early 2000s gave us the birth of the fast zombie. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
And so things that are like vicious and scary, that's just like that imprinted on me. And so like I have a taste for, you know, a more infallible ghost face compared to Stu Mocker, who, you know, gets cranged in the face and like laid out in the hallways. You know, it's
I like that. Like, he's not just invisible, like, in your closet. He's invisible in a group of people. Mm-hmm. You're not safe anywhere. I agree. I feel like 6 was a better movie and much scarier and much more action-packed and a much more fun kind of romp.
I know my ratings. I'm going
to... Can I make one last addendum to my thing? Which is just that I did feel like I was beginning to see, and again, we will not get to see it played out, but I did feel like I was beginning to see several very satisfying arcs. Like, you had the arc of, like, Sam, thank you. Mm-hmm. You had the arc of Sam being protective of Tara and protecting her in her time of need, but then Tara breaking away from her in college and her really struggling to find that balance, right? You also had this Sam and the growing influence of Billy Loomis's disease, right? And I was intrigued with where those things were going. So
So I feel like I either gave the original Scream a 6 or a 7, and I can't remember which. So based off that, these two have to fall below that. So I actually...
I'm sorry. Why do they have to fall below
that? Well, because I didn't enjoy them as much. And they're not as good as the first one. So they don't have to, but like...
but they will.
They will. So I actually liked the 5th one better than the 6th. I thought the 6th one was a little bit all over the place for me. So I'm giving them a collective 4.5. And Scream 5 gets a 5. I think it's a solid film. It's fun. And Scream 6 gets like, I'm going to give it a 4.5. So I don't know. That doesn't really average to a 5, like whatever I just said.
Yeah,
so
go
ignore
your gut,
what
though.
I just said.
Go with your gut.
I'm making this up on the spot. So yeah, I would say that that one gets like a 4.5. It's just slightly under. There's a lot of things I like about it. I just feel like the 5th one feels like a more cohesively well thought out film. It's a little simpler at times. So I think some of the meta things work better. And again, I do think the sixth one could have done more with the city. I don't think it needed three killers. I think that, like, the one cop woman, Kirby, who I guess is a beloved character, I was like,
oh, I don't really care for her. I didn't know her either.
Yeah.
From anything.
I was like, I don't remember
She's
her.
She's not a beloved character. I think she makes her appearance in Scream 4. Oh. So it's like, we're like, we got one movie of investment here.
They were like, we need someone else.
Yeah. Just because she said, hey, girl.
Right.
That was it.
Listen, that's all you need.
Hey, girl.
But I think the sixth one had that scene with the ladder between the windows. And I feel like that is like... I really enjoyed that scene. I really enjoyed the subway scene. So there are things that I really liked about it.
I like Dylan McDermott.
But yeah.
Or sorry, Dermot Mulroney. Fuck.
Oh my God.
And I'll also say that ladder scene prior to them getting on the ladder, I think is the most authentically hurt that people are acting in like the whole franchise.
Yeah.
The two girls that have been stabbed are like, every clip of them, they actually look like they're hurting.
But wait, what about Jenna Ortega in 5 trying to escape the hospital ward?
Oh, in the wheelchair?
In the wheelchair, and she has to get out of bed.
That's
and
like
she's
stuff
like all
that dreams are like a nightmare is made up, where you're like, awful. I'm moving slow, like I'm in slow-mo or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. Shoot, so I'm really torn because I almost feel like I didn't give Scream 1 a high enough rating. But because I really, and maybe just because I just saw it the most recently, I have really enjoyed 6. As a movie that is just being delivered like directly to me and not having to think too much. Yeah. And it was really action-packed. So I'm going to give them a I think I'm going to give them a collective, like, the same. Like a 7.5 to an 8.
Yeah.
I think Scream 6 is really a solid 7. And... what did you say, 7?
I said 7 for the two.
I know,
of them.
I don't want to copycat, but
no,
like,
that's okay.
I do think that, like,
you know, they're kind of mid.
Like, how do you feel about them, honestly?
It's actually where they're at. Like, mid. I feel like, quote, I'm putting air quotations in the air, mid for me is a 5.
Right. So we just have different ratings.
Yeah, we have different ratings.
Which is fine.
But so everyone out there knows this.
It is funny because I actually can't imagine giving something a 10. Like, if you were like, what's a movie that's a 10? I'd be like, I don't know. I'm like, I feel a little like, you're right, like this, it kind of puts me on my heels a little because I enjoy the movies, but you're right, there's something that feels a little weird, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd say a solid 7 for the 5 and 6 combined.
For the set, yeah.
For the set, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Like, I'd probably never watch 5 again for any reason, but I would watch 6.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it was put on somewhere or someone was like, want to watch this, I would be like, yeah, why not? Because it's just fun.
I genuinely was sad when Dewey dies.
Yeah.
I did feel for that.
He died a hero's death.
He did die a hero's death. But, like, you gotta understand, I just watched 4 movies of Dewey before that. So,
see,
like, I was invested.
Yeah, we didn't do
maximum
that.
Investment.
I think the best way to do it is not to watch those. Yeah, right. Really. I would recommend that to people because then you can really enjoy everything.
Yeah, you can be fine when people die.
Right.
There's no attachment to them.
All right. Who's the hottest in the Scream?
I struggled
five
with this
and
one.
Six?
I struggled too.
I really struggled.
They're children.
I've got a firm answer for you. Actually, I've got 2 firm answers for you.
I could hardly think of anyone from 5.
I can't emphasize the firmness of my answer. You know? Enough. I'm going to say Neve Campbell and Dewey.
I love like an aging set. Dewey is
Me
in
too.
Your... Oh,
and like
he really
a sad,
deserves it.
Like a sad, broken, old man, alcoholic Dewey. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh my God.
It works for me. You know, it works for me.
Oh my God.
This changes everything.
With the pepper beard. Works for me.
Oh my God.
We know Harry's kink now.
Yeah.
The hero. I was like, yeah, not... Oh boy. Not Dermot Mulroney.
Dermot Mulroney. Dermot Mulroney.
What's his name? All right, John, you're up.
Oh, I'm up?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to go with 6 first. Okay. I believe her name is Samara Weaving, who is the hot Australian.
The opening scene?
Yes. In the opening scene with that yellow dress.
Yeah.
She is
she
hot.
Dies immediately.
Yeah.
Like,
her, I've seen her in other stuff. She's super hot.
Totally.
So she's my pick for the first one, for the 6th one. I don't know what movie I'm talking about. And then the 5th one? I was thinking about it on the drive here, actually. And I also thought of Neve Campbell.
Yeah.
And out of all of them, she looks good.
We can
match. She was my second pick for the first one.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with her.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to start with 6-2 because I also was going to pick Samara. Is that how you say it? I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
But then I was like, oh no, am I only into the opening scene vixen?
Yo.
That's fantastic.
That may very well be a type for you.
I know. Yeah. So I was like, all right, hold on. Let me back it up. 6 was kind of easy because Hayden Panettiere is, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but yeah. I've always loved her since, you know, Heroes, of
is
course.
She the, which one is she? The first FBI. One killed in 4?
No, she's the FBI agent in 6.
Oh, got you. Oh. But she's also in 4.
Oh, was she? Yeah, oh, right. I didn't see it. And she's beloved or not.
I don't know. That's what someone said to me.
Well, so. She's my pick. She's really she's my second pick for 6. If I don't want to pick the opening scene person again. And then I'm going to go with for 5. I'm going to go with Chad.
Which? Oh, my God. Chad, oh my God. That's fantastic. Is that
the douchebag?
It's the he's football not player guy. No, he's not a douchebag.
I don't think he's too... I don't actually think he's...
He's Mindy's brother, right?
But then he is supposed to be the douchey character.
Yeah, and he's like the love interest for Mindy's Tara brother. In the 6th one.
He's Mindy's brother in 5.
And he like blows it with that girl at the party by being like, I think you might be the killer.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy. Yep. Okay, yeah, got you. Yeah.
I like the funny guy. It didn't register for me in 5 that he was like supposed to be the like jockey douche. Mm-hmm. And then in 6, they kind of double down on that and they're like, oh, he is that's his stereotype. But
it's because I think in 2022, they're doing a little bit more like flexibility with those stereotypes that we identified.
You can be a sensitive douche. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Do we have other things that we want to say about it? So Jen and I invented a game with our last one called Where's the Dick?
I was like, I really hope you bring this up in it.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to fit this film. And I don't think it should.
Please tell me
the dick doesn't fit this film.
The dick was too big.
The dick is too big. So where's the dick? How do we explain this game? I tend to, when I give my analysis, I tend to, for some reason, give some kind of visual detail that I equate to a phallus of some kind. You may recall we were talking about Scream 96. I talked about Drew Barrymore fondling the knives.
Yes,
and like all of that. Yeah,
totally.
And then we did a movie called Older Gods for our bonus episode where there was just the gigantic dick coming out of the sky.
So you just like...
Well, that's
you
kind
find
of on the nose.
Metaphorical dick.
I find the metaphorical.
I mean,
dick,
a big dick coming out of the sky is not metaphorical. Though,
it wasn't actually. A dick,
that was a little
that's
bit
true.
On the.
It was a monolith. It was not a dick.
That's when you realized. Dick. Wait a minute. Am I seeing this everywhere?
Mm-hmm. So I mean, if we don't have any dicks, I'll just delete this. But do we?
I feel like you should keep this in still.
Do we have any dicks?
Yeah, maybe cut it.
I don't think there are any in this one.
No, I don't think that's kind of the thing, not to like go crazy here, but that's kind of what I liked about 5 and 6 versus 1. Like,
tell me.
There was just so much less like sexual innuendo that you had to deal with. There wasn't like a ton of sexual tension.
Yeah.
Not to say that I don't enjoy that in a film, but like,
yeah.
It was like, for the sake of what? There was no like damsel in distress. Yeah. It was like women. I felt more like women's empowered. Even to the point where they're pulling Tara, like the girlfriends are like, Tara, you don't need to go upstairs with that guy. And
right,
sex, you know?
Right.
And she's like, yo, I get to choose if I want to do what I want to do.
That's right.
I think that's the dick. That guy.
That guy is a dick.
He's the phallic thing. Like, I get to choose if I want to have sex with a douchebag if I want.
That's
and
such a good call.
It like, is, but I actually feel like that is a thing. I feel like I enjoyed some of the sexual aspect of the one in the 90s. Plus, Neve Campbell is like our final girl in a way, and she has sex, and she still lives to the end. So it like defies that, like it like that trope. I think that a lot of movies today eliminate sex in many ways, and I find that to be. I don't know. I just, it's not interesting.
That's
I feel
true.
Like, it's like, why are we removing sex from things? It's like, are we afraid of it? a lot of people are. I don't know. I just feel like it could have had a little bit like Tara is actually annoyed that they're pulling her away from going upstairs.
That's what I liked about it. Like her being like, I know what I'm doing. I'm not like a helpless moron. No, like really this guy doesn't have control over me. I'm just like making a choice to have some fun.
But then like even he's got her fireball in his and room. Chad almost kiss, but like not till the, I don't know. Like I feel like it's like, I don't want to use the word like prudish, but it feels like it's like removed for a purpose for like a younger generation that is wouldn't want those kinds of things in it. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Well, I do not have the qualifications to be making this assessment, but like I feel like a lot of times when sexual content is presented in film and television, it is received like there is a real focus on like especially
female subjugation,
especially sex between men and women. There's a real focus on female subjugation, and there's a question of the extent to which this female character is just a vehicle to have sexual content in a film
or to like explain the morals of the days or something. Right. But I think what you're saying is totally right. Like I think it is removed. It was removed on purpose, but maybe more so just because they didn't want to deal with like the backlash of like, you kind of have to choose. How do you present this sexuality? Are we presenting it in like a female empowerment? Are we presenting it in like, you know, like
they're just shying away. You have to treat it carefully.
Like, is it a bunch of men making this film? Because they're shying away probably because they don't want to get in trouble.
Right. Well, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, there's only one that like is interested in sex, and it's in the fifth one, and it's Mindy, the lesbian character.
Oh, right.
Queer character. We don't know. Like, I assume, I don't remember if she says how she defines herself, but like you know, she's on the couch.
She's
like
on
teenagers
couch.
Would want to have sex,
right.
Which it doesn't need to be in
and
the
she's
movie
kind of
but
that
like
Lothario character where she's like, come here baby, you know, like I'm gonna be the lead here, you know. Not to say that in a bad way, but like she's, you know, she's in charge.
And what's that jockey character's name again?
Chat
The jockey
one that you identified as.
Oh, the
as
jockey.
Your...
Chad, yes.
Chad.
Of course it's
Were you
Chad.
Thinking like a
or
jockey,
Brad.
Like riding a horse?
What was it
kind of. I was like, the jockey?
Along the line of what? Sorry.
You know the jockey character.
I know. I was like, wow. To my knowledge, there are no horses in the film.
Right.
No horses were harmed.
But there's a moment where he's on the couch. The moment where he blows it. His girlfriend is like, let's go fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let's go. It's time. Mm-hmm. And he is the one who's like, let's put the brakes on this for a second. And that to me feels like such a... Yeah, like that's...
Was that an intentional thing? Let's have the dude say no.
Here's an idea.
Like
the girls are
interested in sex, but then they don't actually do anything in the sixth one to complicate that, because that actually feels like a little simplistic and like, oh, we don't want to offend anyone, so we'll have the women be interested in sex, but they won't actually have sex.
Right. Let's just let everyone know that we're all interested, but we're not going to move.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
That's a good point. Yeah. All right. So the dick is is cut off.
The dick has been cut off. There is no dick.
2022, there is no dick. There is
no
nothing.
It's been severed.
I was going to say
it's
castrated.
A horror podcast.
I like severed.
Castrated. Yeah, that was the word I was looking for when I said cut off, but everything's fine.
Here's how we'll end it. Are you going to watch 7 when it comes out?
Is it going to come out?
There will be a 7. It just like is not going to be about Sam and Tara and...
Yeah, I'll probably watch it.
I will too, because I mean, I think you have to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Same. My investment is too great.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point
even if to just be like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
I need to watch it.
We should have a viewing party and live pod it.
That actually, that's a fabulous idea.
It is a fabulous
idea.
Like, we could
do
Mystery Science Theater 3000 with it.
Yes. Ooh. All right. That's it.
Put that in the bank.
A whole new dimension for our.
All right. When it comes out, that's what's happening.
Done.
It's
going
to be a lot of me being like, there's no way she could walk right now. That's my only complaint usually.
Well, anyway, all right, Kate, you were our first two-part guest, so thank you for enduring this for us nights and letting us invade your space.
Mm-hmm. So much fun.
And making you watch 3 movies.
I know, I'm like, please make me do this again.
All right. You're back. Scream 7, it's happening.
100%.